The Lifeboat Hour with Michael Rupert, Sundays at 9 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Nightclub at the end of the world. This is Michael C. Rupert. Welcome back to the Lifeboat Hour. It is Sunday, January 23rd, 2011. We're trying to do some stretchy stuff here tonight. It's going to be edgy live radio. Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney was our guest. I spoke to her a few days ago. She had to make an urgent trip. There's a lot of things unraveling around the world. She's going to be our guest tonight, but she's on an airplane somewhere over the Atlantic Ocean, and we had made arrangements to try and connect with her on the aircraft. We're still trying to do that now. We'll keep trying for a few minutes while I open up the show. If not, I do have an amazing standby guest who I stand in awe of. We'll talk about Tom Whipple in a minute. But let's just catch up a little bit from last week. It's getting real clear to everybody right now that we are at a point of systemic failure, as Chris Hedges calls it, and that's what it is. Everything is breaking down all at once, and we are seeing now the Irish Prime Minister, Brian Cowan, getting kicked out of office. The Irish government just printed, I think it was 25 billion or 120, it was one of those billions numbers, German euros. They just printed it on their own. It's counterfeiting. Doesn't make any difference. Not good money, but they printed it. The Irish government's falling, and Ireland is looking like it may go the way of Iceland and choose to default, which I thoroughly encourage the Irish to do. They'll stand a better chance even under the devastation being free and on their own than they will further enslaving themselves with debt to senior bondholders who always get their money at the people's expense. So we're watching Ireland closely. Cynthia McKinney and I had a long talk about that. But around the world, food riots are taking place throughout the Arab world in the Middle East, from Tunisia, where there have been seven immolations, seven people setting themselves on fire, burning themselves to death. Those have now spread to Yemen, one in Cairo, Egypt, and Egypt is what everybody's watching, as we've been reporting on the World News Desk at CollapseNet that the Egyptian military appears to be mobilizing for massive civil unrest throughout the country. That'll shake the Arab world. We've had fuel riots in Ecuador and Chile, and those are coming probably soon in Great Britain. Food prices are soaring, inflation's out of control, China's collapsing, and Car 54, where are you? That's an old TV show that only old people would know. But at any rate, what we want to talk about now, let me just do a couple items of business here. First, there's a major shift taking place in my focus at CollapseNet and CollapseNet's focus. It's very clear now, and I've been talking with people all over the spectrum, and our guest tonight will probably join that camp too, and everybody, the experts who I respect, whether it's Chris Martinson or Nicole Foss, even Cynthia McKinney, many others, Tom Brown, my good friend, we all see that there's no time for anything else now but to get ready for civil unrest and serious collapse. And there's a time when you got to refocus your priorities to take care of what's most important, and there are things we need to prepare for. I will be, I'm forming, if you will, a close business relationship or a partnership with Tom. We're not setting up a company, nor are we getting married. But Tom and I will be doing joint seminars together, and I will be attending his basic course in the Santa Cruz Mountains, February 6th through 12th. I'm very happy to announce that any CollapseNet members will automatically receive a 10% discount. And if you know about Tom Brown, his schools have almost always been full for, you know, many, many years now. And he has a legacy of tens of thousands of people who have benefited from the many courses he offered. And I will be helping him probably in some way on his Urban Escape School, which will be in Los Angeles sometime this summer. You can find out about that on Tom Brown's, Tom Brown Jr.'s website, trackerschool.com. And so we're going to have a couple of pre-recorded shows coming up in the near future, but I got some upcoming guests to announce, and I'm still hoping we can get Cynthia McKinney on. She really wanted to be on tonight, and I really wanted to have her. Tom Lindsay next week. L-I-N-Z-E-Y is a lawyer. He's the head of the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. Okay, so what's that? I'm not a guy who gets excited over 501c3 nonprofits anymore. I mean, I love Transition US, and they're great. But it's like I don't expect world-changing stuff, but here is one that is changing the world. They are pioneering moves by local governments to pass ordinances declaring that the earth has rights. I love it. And they're working. They are stopping corporations in Mount Shasta, California. The CELDF and their efforts have stopped Coca-Cola and others from draining the aquifer, from dumping toxic chemicals into the township. And it's breaking out all over the country. This is an amazing thing that's kind of been below radar. I was so pleased to run across them this week. Tom will be my guest next week. And on February 13th, Peter Joseph of Zeitgeist will be our guest. That'll be a pre-recorded show, as will the show with that I'm going to do, excuse me, not next week, yet. On February 6th, we'll have a pre-recorded show, as will the show be on the 13th, because I'll be at Tom Brown's camp. February 20th, James Howard Kunstler will be our guest on the show. And if we don't get Cynthia tonight, we will get her back as soon as we possibly can. Okay, I'm going to move right into this, and I'm kind of free-forming this tonight. Most of you know that I've been involved in the peak oil movement since late 2001, and that's when I first got turned on to it. And I've met a great many people as I've traveled to seven or eight countries, reporting on it, lecturing on it. And I've come across some amazing minds and some amazing thinkers. And being a writer myself, I truly appreciate a guy with a great turn of phrase. But I think it wasn't about, and he'll tell us, in 2002 or so, maybe three, up crops this guy writing for a little paper called the Falls Church News Press, which is a suburb of D.C. in Virginia. And, my God, he's just eloquent, he gets it, do a little research, and we find out that the guy was a CIA analyst for, I think, 27 years, long time. He's been retired for a long time, and I wanted to get him and Cynthia on this show so we could knock stereotypes out of the way here, because of the important messages that so many people see the seriousness of what's upon us now. Anyway, Tom's written probably scores of stories that have been one of the best chronicles of the history of this movement, and his analysis has been just breathtaking. And of course, we're both sad to see the events turn the way they are now. But Tom Whipple, I would love to welcome you to the Lifeboat Hour.
Thank you very much.
All right, so you have just written some stirring pieces, but you and I had a phone call yesterday, and I don't want to put words in your mouth because superlatives now are kind of feeling kind of cheap, but things are pretty serious, aren't they?
I certainly think they are. I'm surprised at how fast things are starting to move now. We were the conventional thinking about peak oil was we still had a couple of years left before the real trouble started. Real trouble being much higher prices.
Right.
Prices spiking up to the point it's really going to do damage to the economy. But considering what happened in the last, 6 to 10 months, and the way things are moving right now, I think we would see trouble, you know, somewhere in the next 6 months ahead, this thing.
I think we're probably sneaking up on $100 oil within a week or 10 days.
In some places in the world, we're already at $100 oil. London is just a couple of dollars below 100, and some of the fancier grades of oil are already selling for higher than 100.
Okay.
The really good stuff. It's selling for over 100 now.
Now, you've been writing also about the whole interplay of how all this works together, like kind of like I do, where, you know, where I talk about geopolitics and economics and so on. I'm pretty very alarmed about the economic situation globally with inflation, especially in relation to food prices and gasoline prices, and there seems to be no end in sight to that. What's your take on the financial
stuff? I'm afraid a whole bunch of bad things are coming together right now. At the present time, we're just the beginning of a number of food shortages developing all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of this, believe it or not, they tell me that even though we're having bumper crops, we're just eating more. Too many people in the world are too much better off. The consumption of meat in China is something like tripled in the last 20 years per capita consumption. And we're simply using up more food than we can grow, And this can, as we all know, can lead to all sorts of problems. I think some of the citizens in Tunisia started with, you know, food prices going up. We had food riots a couple of years ago. I would not be surprised if they had a lot more trouble on the score, you know, before this year is out.
Yeah, I would completely agree with you. And I would note that food riots happen not when there's no food. It happens when people can't afford the food and they can literally almost see it.
Well, that's exactly what's happening now. I think somebody said that food in China was up to something like 60%.
Yeah.
Usually priced there and this sort of thing. And, you know, we're going to see this a lot of other places. The repercussion of the food may be even worse than we think around the world because a large number of people have to import their food. Mm-hmm. And one of the more ironic things is practically all the Middle East oil exporters are no longer food sufficient. You know, the Saudis, Kuwait, UAE, the rest of these people, they'll import practically all their food.
Mm-hmm.
And this is okay. I presume they'll have enough money to buy it on the world market. But one of the first phenomena we see, as soon as food starts getting short, exporters just really start cutting back on exports.
I've noticed that there's been heavy investment with countries like Saudi Arabia buying large tracts of farmland in Africa.
Yes, in Africa, that sort of thing. They tried doing farming there themselves a few years back. They simply gave up. They simply, the bio was totally prohibited. They tried to desalinize water and whatnot. It just didn't make any sense at all.
Okay, so what I'm thinking now and what I'm seeing is as the civil unrest spreads from Algeria, Tunisia, into Egypt, and Yemen is also particularly hot. I've also seen a story that it's food riots or food protests have broken out in Kenya. Now, Here's my question. If China and Russia or whoever buys up all the arable land in Africa and the Africans starve to death while they're watching crops being grown, how's that going to play in Africa?
Well, that's one of the many ironies of what's going on right now. Exactly whether people are going to let them get away with this stuff or not.
Yeah.
Sort of easy to sneak in fields and feel stuff at night, that sort of thing. You're going to see problems, no question about that.
If you would like to ask Tom Whipple or me a question tonight, you can call in toll-free at 1-888-874-4888, 874-4888, or you can email me directly, and I'll read the email and read your question on the air. And that's Lifeboat Hour, I'll be all right, at CollapseNet.com, Lifeboat Hour at CollapseNet.com. I'll get that. Tom, I had a question that somebody sent in for Cynthia McKinney. I'm going to ask you. How's that?
Go ahead. I don't know if I know the answer.
All right, let's try it. You got to think on your feet. This is from Dr. Dan Jaffers. He asks, hey, Mike, I'm a member of CollapseNet. Thank you. And would like to ask Cynthia McKinney, Tom Whipple, his opinion on the Federal Reserve and whether its abolition would be a good thing for America. There you go. What do you think?
Oh, boy, that's just gets off of realms of stuff I just never been into too much lately. I seriously doubt it. I think every modern governmental system has got to have a central bank. We just have to call ours the Federal Reserve. Mm-hmm. Whether they're doing the right things or not right now is a totally different issue.
I think as long
as the government's going to issue currency, there's got to be somebody to, you know, centrally regulate stuff.
Well, you know, there's bills in 10 states now to introduce gold and silver coinage, state coinage, as a currency. And I'll answer with my opinion, which is that I think it's inevitable that the Federal Reserve will go bankrupt. And I stand by that. What it's going to be replaced with, God only knows. And
who knows? Whether or not the size of the economy, the number of people around or whatnot, would ever let gold and silver coinage substitute, probably not.
Yeah,
the amount of money needs to be in circulation to keep 300 million people functioning at some level.
Yes, I know.
It's just so massive. There isn't enough gold and silver to do it anymore.
Of course not.
Those ideas went by the board 100 years ago.
Well, that's assuming that we expect the economic system to function as a cohesive whole, as it more or less is now.
That's a very good question where this is going to go. I know a lot of people. You mentioned Nicole Foss. I follow her rather carefully.
Yeah, she's great.
You know, she may be right on line with this sort of thing, that there was some major economic collapse coming here the next can't put your finger on it. It's too complicated to put your finger on it.
But you know, we look at everything else, and I said systemic collapse for a reason, and that's because there are so many things happening. We have 700 water mains a day failing in the United States. Attacks and homicides of police officers are increasing all over the country as the budget cutbacks really
We just did not put enough money to maintain our infrastructure. We built ourselves a very, very elaborate society here. Some very good books around here, Tater, Collapse of Complex Civilizations. Boy, nobody's ever more complex than what we have.
Yeah, and I have this signed picture of retired Navy Commander Dick Marcinko in my living room, you know, in my Hall of Shame. And it's all about keep it simple, stupid, and it's his rant about how everything fails in direct relation to its level of complexity, and that seems to be what I'm seeing.
Exactly right. We have created a society here that's just absolutely mind-boggling complexity. People have no idea where their food comes from.
All right.
Except at the store down the street and how it gets here, the complex path it takes to do this stuff and process and everything else.
You didn't? You mean Safeway doesn't make it?
Oh,
sorry.
Store.
We have a question just came in. When will we see shortages in oil? Tom, you want to go with that first?
Okay, real shortages. You're never going to see real shortages. You're just going to see very high prices. The market will always clear. What you may see is much, much higher prices. And we're fairly certain, those of us who are studying the oil situation, that about 2 to 3 years from now, the world production is going to start down. They simply aren't drilling enough new oil wells to keep up for depletion. As long as we keep up, you know, we burn 31 billion barrels every year.
Mm-hmm.
And we just aren't finding enough oil to replace that. Getting it drilled and tapped into production quickly. Are we going to see a price spike this year? I personally think the odds are pretty good we're going to see a price spike this year. I'm just reviewing the Chinese numbers this afternoon. China's consumption went up something like 18% last year. And unless this falls away very rapidly, all the numbers of how much oil the world is producing and what the demand is just do not add up,
mm-hmm.
you know, for this year, for 2011.
World production of conventional oil peaked in 2006, confirmed by all accounts now. Ken DeFays would say November 2005.
Yeah.
At roughly 80, production was roughly 86.
Well, actually, the real oil was about 70, 75 million barrels a day. But 88 is what we're producing now. There's a lot of other stuff in there, natural gas liquids and whatnot.
Right. And
which, interesting enough, are not real oil. They don't have anywhere near the energy content. For the cost of
no.
This tar sand stuff is ridiculous. It takes almost as much energy to make the tar sands as they should get out of it. It's not a long-term solution to, you know, living with all the automobiles we have right now.
And yet we know that from not only from IEA, who is not totally credible all the time, but we know from a number of sources that demand for oil this year will be higher than
it has ever been.
They're projecting
a demand for 189 million barrels this year, and that's assuming the Chinese stop growing, just sort of grow moderately and don't grow any rapidly this year.
Oh, but wait a minute. CNBC and everybody else is saying that the whole world is depending, the whole global economy is depending upon continued Chinese economic growth.
Well, that's the trouble. If they do, there it goes. There's a great contraction right there. You got it.
Yeah.
If the Chinese grow anywhere nearly as fast as they did this year at 10%. They're probably going to have to suck up, you know, 10% more energy, whether it's oil or coal or what have you.
All right, this year,
and there goes the rest of it. The price is just going to go off the scale.
We have another question that just came in, Tom, from Peter Nikitas, good friend of mine, very smart guy. No, he has three, actually. Do total energy quotients, or TEQs, I don't know the term, present a useful means to connect energy input into currency systems? You know what a TEQ is, Tom?
I think this is a method of, you know, allocating or rationing fuels it's talking about. The British government, the British Parliament, or a group of the British Parliament just put out a report last week on this, which I plan to study in the next couple of days here. But this is a method. Somewhere along the line, we just have to be honest with ourselves. Nobody wants to think about this. We have to be honest and say we're going to have to ration somewhere along the line.
I know that plans are being. I know the plans are being drafted in Britain right now. We've flipped two or three stories.
Well,
that's what it is.
That's one of the ways you do this stuff. How you do this? I think it's going to be a very interesting question. Now, is America ready to start rationing? No, we're probably 10 or 20 years away from it. Things got pretty bad before we do this sort of. But you know, with less and less energy left, there's got to be some reasonable and fair way allocate what we have left amongst the people.
And hopefully,
otherwise, if you just do it by price, the rich guys end up with the oil, and the rest of everybody else walks.
And they're going to use it for the wrong things. We have to conserve this resource.
And that's what it is. If you use it, it only goes to rich guys. It goes to their jet planes and yachts and
make them another $200,000 car. Yeah,
that's exactly where this stuff ends up, and it's not going for the best use of society. Therefore, it's absolutely totally inevitable that there will have to be some sort of called ratio allocation scheme somewhere along the line.
Okay.
And this is one way of doing this. It's rather complicated, too much to talk about here, but basically everybody gets a certain minimum amount, then you can buy more if you want. What is if you can afford it and buy more. If you don't use it, say you're old and bedridden, you have very little use for energy.
Don't drive and don't fly. We're coming up on a break, Tom. Right before we go to the break, though, Tom, I'm in a band called New White Trash, and we've written a bunch of songs that we think go with stuff.
Okay.
And this is one that I think is real appropriate given your former profession and
go ahead.
And what I've done my whole life. And Cynthia McKinney would have loved it, too. This is a New White Trash song off our new album. Just officially released, Double Wide, which again you can find us at New White Trash. The vocals on this song called Don't Dig Too Deep are done by the incredible Kristen Vigard. Here's Don't Dig Too Deep.
Everyone within it.
That was a song that honest people should remember a lot. Don't Dig Too Deep from New White Trash. What'd you think, Tom?
Fine. Wait. I wasn't familiar with it before, but I am now.
Don't ask for a copy of the lyrics because then you'll be digging too deep.
Okay.
So, anyway, we got a couple minutes now before the station break at the bottom of the hour. When we come back, we're going to be talking to probably the best journalist who has been covering peak oil for a long time, Tom Whipple. Of course, I've done a little journalism myself, but Tom is, I always read everything he writes. And we'll be talking about what's going on in the world. Before we get to the bottom of the hour, I've been asked, we mentioned, we talked about Nicole Foss, Tom. Nicole Foss will be giving a talk entitled Building Local Resilience in an Era of Economic Turmoil and Resource Depletion at First Church in Oberlin, Ohio, this coming Friday, January 28th at 7 p.m. If you want information on how to attend this talk by Nicole Foss, a.k.a. Stoneleigh, who many of us really think a lot of, contact Brian Burgess, B-U-R-G-E-S-S, at bburgess, B-U-R-G-E-S-S, at oberlin.net. With any questions, he'll send you the information on the show. So, okay. Tom, we got about 2 minutes before the break. Can you give us 2 minutes on ethanol? Methanol, ethanol.
Well, ethanol, okay. Well, I presume we're talking about corn ethanol here,
yes,
which we're making in the United States in prodigious quantities. And for many of us, this is just a major mistake. There's still argue about whether it takes more energy to make it than you get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're eating up, you know, massive amounts of food. I think somewhere I saw the numbers the other day, something like 20% of the U.S. corn crop is now going to making ethanol.
At a time when food prices are soaring all over the world.
I know, it was food prices soaring. This is absolutely absurd. We are going to need that stuff to eat fairly quickly here. And just so some people can, you know, stretch the fuel supply a little bit is totally silly. Right now there really isn't any shortage of gasoline, maybe high priced, but the ethanol doesn't do much for it. By the way, I think the United States is subsidizing it at 250 cents a gallon or something, which makes the whole thing even more ridiculous. Congress had a chance to knock off the subsidies the other day, and they didn't, which, you know, again shows, I take it, the power of the agricultural lobbies on this, which I actually love it.
Gee, with the Republican House so intent on cutting budgets, you mean?
I know.
Yeah.
I know. They're intention of cutting budgets. The easy, low-hanging fruit of some of the sillier things, such as corn ethanol and farm subsidies, probably somewhere at the top of the list to cut.
We're going to have to go to a station break here at the bottom of the hour. We got 30 minutes left to go with Tom Whipple of the Falls Church News Press. We'll be back right after this.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Freedom News Hour will bring you up to date on the latest news on the financial meltdown.
Begin restoring local communities. It can happen.
We'll be exploring the issues from a freedom-oriented, small government perspective.
I'm Walt Thiessen.
I'm Melinda Pillsbury Foster.
I am Jake Towne.
Join us live Thursday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Gary Knoll. I've been on radio for 37 years, every day, and I'm pleased that the Progressive Radio Network exists, because this is the one form that brings together some of the most important, probing, creative, and dynamic minds on the planet. Join us each and every day, 24/7, on the Progressive Radio Network, your home for independent thinking.
We'll be right back.
This is John Rappaport inviting you to my new radio show on the Progressive Radio Network, which will air every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm an investigative reporter. I've spent 20 years researching health and medical fraud, deep politics. I'll have lots of very knowledgeable guests on the show who have information to share with you so that you can live a more healthy and informed life. Join me every Wednesday on PRN. That's 7 p.m. Eastern Time, the John Rappaport Show. See you then.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Well, that's me in the background singing those that song is called Girls Got from New White Trash. That was me singing the Baby I'm On My Way. It's one of the first songs I co-wrote with the band. You can find us at newwhitetrash.com. Our album, Double White, our double CD, is there. You can download it for $11.11. You can get a CD sent to you for $22.22. That's two CDs, 37 songs, all original. Or get a sponsor's edition, which will line you up to help us get our next project off the ground. And it's a beautiful handcrafted photograph book. It's a great coffee table book. NewWhiteTrash.com, that's the commercial for the band. God, I sure need that music to keep my head straight sometimes. Tom, you want to do some geopolitics?
Go ahead.
All right. I've been watching what I perceive to be the failing military campaign in Afghanistan now, with the NATO force led by General Petraeus really being besieged on all sides. And we've seen a number of increasing attacks on fuel convoys coming from the east from Pakistan. But now Iran has just announced an embargo saying it's no longer sending any fuel to Afghanistan.
I think they found our Achilles heel. The Iranians did.
Yeah, yeah.
If we have to fly all the fuel to the place, it's going to be very, very, very expensive.
And boy, that's not going to sit well either. I mean, there are times when I wonder how von Paulus felt at Stalingrad.
Exactly. This Afghanistan thing just wasn't going anywhere any more than Vietnam was going anymore, you know, 40, 50 years ago, this sort of thing. You know, how many different people had a shot at Afghanistan up there?
Yeah.
Sort of thing. You're simply not going to keep this under control, by the way. We're thinking about doing it.
And we're seeing really strong military investment, and I wouldn't call it mobilization from China, but they're building an aircraft carrier. They're purchasing, I think, two or three. They've just had the first test flight of a stealth fighter.
I know. They're feeling the roads over there now and that sort of thing. They're getting rich. Why not? That sort of thing.
I also see that they're trying to upstage us a little bit globally.
And they also realize there is some vulnerability. They, of course, have to import an awful lot of stuff, too. They have to import half their oil's coming in now. They'll be up with us with a large percentage of their oil being imported pretty soon. And it looks like they're going to have to import food and whatnot. They do need some military power. They can't get themselves, you know, run over by every fishing boat full of Somali pirates that come along.
Right.
That sort of thing. Are they going to confront us? No, I doubt it. You know, we don't do it. There's no need to do it anymore. You know,
Not directly.
We're doing ourselves in quite nicely.
Isn't that the truth? I don't think they'll confront us directly, but with the piracy, that's another issue. Now, I've been watching piracy now for about 4 or 5 years, and I had some early stories on it at my old blog before we had moved it to CollapseNet. I was clipped some stories showing that some intelligence services from the West had been actually setting up pirate bases in Kenya. Piracy has grown, and what I have seen is like this amazing aggregation of naval forces in and around the Persian Gulf and the Gulf of Arabia. And it's like I see so many warships there supposed to fight pirates, and by all accounts now piracy is of just this booming business, very, very sophisticated. But it occurs to me that if you put too many cats in a burlap sack and shake it, there's going to be some shootings breaking out. And this is all right near the Straits of Hormuz. Now, that's a scenario that really scares me. What do you see there?
I'm not sure the straits have too much to do with this, but, boy, I'm impressed at how far these guys can range out at sea. They seem to be able to get themselves out there.
Isn't
that
amazing?
A good 1,000, 2,000 miles from home port in a fishing boat or something. They jump in a small outboard and, chase after something going on. I'm just quite surprised how we haven't done, or the boats haven't done defending themselves. I would be surprised anybody that would, would go through there wouldn't hire some guards. It shouldn't take very much to fight off a bunch of teenagers with AK-47s and whatnot.
Right.
The small boat just surprised me. Every now and again somebody kicks back. I see the South Koreans kick back the other day, and they just charged on board and killed everybody.
Well, the Rocks, as they're known, are legendary fighters and well respected.
That's sort of they just sort of do this sort of thing. I just don't think they've got quite all the protocols right on how to do this stuff yet. I've noticed interesting techniques by like putting fire hose along the sides and sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Can't crawl up a boat very well if you have to go through a stream of a fire hose. There's plenty of water along, so go ahead and pump it across the sides of the boat.
There's all kinds of things that could be done, but clearly there's something moving under the carpet, as Cynthia McKinney would say. And we've been trying throughout the show. We've not been able to connect with her on board her airline flight. So I'll let you know as soon as we get her rescheduled. We've kind of given up on that. Let's talk about Mexico for a minute. Mexico was, Tom, our third largest oil supplier?
Third largest oil importer. Their major field collapsed a couple of years ago. Their exports have dropped considerably.
20% this year.
20% this year they're down, and, there's no future there in this sort of thing. They keep talking a pretty good game. They're sort of optimistic they can keep it going. But I presume they're going to be pretty close to not a non-exporting country in another 4 or 5 years. It's just going to be not enough. Plus, the domestic consumption is going up pretty rapidly, at which point they have a lot of trouble. There goes their foreign exchange. There goes an awful lot of their earnings. There goes an awful lot of the state budget.
And there might be a lot of violence in Mexico.
There's already a lot of violence in Mexico, and it's very close to us.
There is a direct connection.
One of the dangerous sides of the Middle East is something else. That's 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 miles away.
Yeah, exactly.
And, as soon as jet air travel becomes far less frequent, that's not going to be much of a problem.
Michael F. sent in a question, and we've got now 4 or 5 questions backed up. Are you aware of the import-export model? I'm not, Tom. When will Mexico stop exporting oil? And again, let me just take that one quickly.
I think in Mexico you're looking at 5 or 6 years. Actually, the Cantarell field's pretty well done its collapsing, and they're thrashing around rapidly trying to start deep sea drilling. But that's a very slow process. They're not in the business.
Very expensive and very risky.
Very expensive. It's going to be a decade or more. Starting this seriously now, it's going to be a decade before they get much going.
We just had a story that went up, I think, about a week, 10 days ago on the World News Desk at CollapseNet, because I read about 80 stories a day that are compiled using our special research method that our members have access to. And it said that American investment banks had refused to underwrite any American oil company going into Mexico to help with deep sea drilling. In other words, insurance companies won't underwrite the risk involved, which tells me that it's just like we've all known in peak oil for a long time. There's always going to be oil in the ground. It's just going to be impossible to get to.
Well, that's interesting. This sort of thing, you're going to see a lot of civil unrest in places surrounding all this sort of thing. I think Iraq is your prime example right now. The Iraqis are very, talking about getting to 12 million barrels a day being the Saudis, or maybe 5 million barrels a day in a few years.
Wrong.
And I just have a lot of trouble seeing this. The bombs are still going off there. Make a substantial increase in oil production, they've got to do totally rebuild the infrastructure. Water pipes in and everything else under the sun.
Right, right.
And it's going to cost many, many billions of dollars. And I'm not even sure they just got the whole logistics there to handle that sort of thing.
Now,
there's hardly any electricity left in the country, that sort of thing. The food's running out. The water's running out.
And they're about ready to go back to fighting again.
We're basically out of it as far as being in a position to actively intervene. send an armored brigade through town, that sort of thing. It's not going to be there anymore. We may be in a training mode out in some camp somewhere.
Well, here's something I'm not clear on about Iraq, and I've been following it pretty closely. Muqtada al-Sadr, who is a Shiite cleric, who commands the Mehdi army and really fought the U.S. Army to a standstill in southeastern Iraq. And he's been in Iran for a while. He's just come back. Now he's just made a quick trip back to Iran again. He's laying low, but we have the Iranian president, al-Maliki, saying, hey, every American will be out of the country in 2011. And I watched him say that, and it was emphatic. This was a very in-your-face, blunt statement. And I'm wondering about these three gigantic military bases that are permanent bases that we built there that we had never had any intention of leaving.
Plan to stay there for a long time. And I think you got the Obama administration's got some real hard problems ahead of us here on this sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I foresee a serious multi-front, multi-dimensional, if you will, warfare scenario breaking out.
The potential for much more open civil warfare, not just an occasional suicide bomber going off.
Right,
and literally, semi-organized groups of people fighting each other.
Plus the Shias and the Sunnis.
I think the Sunnis are going to stand for too much of this much longer.
Exactly.
And where the Iranians get into this thing is another question. There's all sorts of problems, that sort of thing.
Looks like impending chaos. Here's another question from Elaine Earle. I'm a CollapseNet member. Thank you, Elaine, and appreciate you and your work very much. My question is, I'm a single mom with a 12-year-old son, and I will probably be needing a new vehicle in the next 3 months. What should I buy? I will most likely be sheltering in place, living in a great suburb of Charleston, South Carolina. I've been there. Beautiful city. Work and son's dad are 14 miles away. Do I look for a diesel, a motorbike with a sidecar, or just a regular vehicle? I definitely will be paying cash and most likely a late model. Thank you so much, Elaine. These are tough questions that people are asking, and they're down.
Well, they are, because we simply do not know where the whole oil price structure is going to go pretty soon here. We could easily see. We have a lot of people now seriously talking about $200 a barrel oil, which essentially puts gasoline at $6 a gallon. And I know they pay this in Europe regularly. They've been paying this much in Europe for decades now, but they're used to it. They're set up to do it. They've got the small cars.
Mm-hmm.
To impose $6 a gallon gasoline on the American populace here, especially in a very short time. This runs up in a question of few months, people don't have time to react or do anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be very, very hard.
And Elaine, I would say a lot's going to depend upon what you can find. You can't hold out for the ideal car.
Yes, I know. What you'd like is some sort of electric car, something that, A, they're very, very expensive. There's not many around now. It's going to be 4 or 5 years before they're commonly for sale.
I would probably go for an 80s or 90s or early 2000s.
What I would do is just not put too much money into it. If you need a new car now, get something economical, small motor.
Don't buy a new one.
Don't invest too much. You may just have to abandon the darn thing somewhere along the line.
That's exactly right. I would look for a diesel, like a Mercedes or a Volkswagen diesel. It was in great shape.
Yeah, if you can't afford the fuel for it, we're going to see an awful lot of abandoned cars in this country one of these days.
Yeah,
okay. I can't remember exactly what year, but I suspect certainly before this decade's out, you're just going to park the things. It simply costs too much to operate, and $6 a gallon, you don't want to do that sort of thing. Especially the bigger, older ones that consume an awful lot of gasoline.
I would get I would get a used car.
Sure.
And I would spend any extra money making sure that used car was running like a clock. Number one, it makes you less of a target when civil unrest comes if you don't want to be driving around anything flashy.
Yeah.
And Tom's very right. The things that we have to prepare for are a lot of things being abandoned. And, what can be saviors, we think, might become anchors. So we have to become not too attached. But I would definitely buy something used and make sure that it's just running great. Put extra money into fixing it up and be prepared not that it may not be of use to you soon. Okay, here's a question from Justin DeArmond, a CollapseNet member here. Hi, thank you. To say my new family and I are extremely great. Thank you. Thank you for... I'm disabled and can no longer work due to severe back injury, so we're receiving limited help from the government in the form of welfare. So my fiancé is working and going to school full-time. Jesus, Tom, when you hear what people are living with now, while I raise our children, my question to you is, with such a limited budget, literally living paycheck to paycheck, what should my priorities be as far as acquiring assets? Should I be trying to get some gold or silver, or should I get food storage going? And if so, for how long? Should I get weapons or seeds? Hard to know what to get first with such severely limited budget and a new family. Oh. Thank you all for your
help. These are just very, very tough questions. We just don't know where this is going to go. An awful lot of this is going to be the question of how the government, what's left of it, eventually sorts itself out, or what sort of aid to provide to people. Whether the government ends up being a massive soup kitchen or not, that sort of thing, which I suspect it may.
With GMO soup.
Yeah, exactly. If you're going to forestall civil unrest, you'd have to feed people.
Yes.
I think it's going to become a very high priority.
Just like
we're basically doing with food stamps now. Something like 38 million people in food stamps now or something, you know.
43, and that's 1 in 7.
43 is. It keeps going up. I lose track of it.
Yeah, so. Me too.
That sort of thing. On food stamps, well, that's the first thing you're doing to stall the problem right there. That's from that. Of course, I presume that's all given out in a certain amount of money. If the price of food goes up, that's going to get, you know, going to buy it less and less.
Right. So, Justin, I would approach this from Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You need food first, and I recommended 7 months ago, 8 months ago, on CollapseNet.com that all of our members should stock up on 3 months' worth of food. I see that as the first issue. Look at the things that you cannot do without for the shortest length of time, like air is one, water, food, those things, and build up your the hierarchy from there. I wouldn't worry about gold at the moment. Right now, if you don't own gold and your budget is limited, I wouldn't spend it on gold. That's for the people who have money to invest. Right now is the time to take care of, make sure that your basic needs are covered. That's food, that's shelter, that's first aid, that's water purification, fresh water supplies, 700 water mains a day failing in this country. You want to look to all those needs first, what you can take care of your family with. The weapons is a separate issue. I have no idea what your training and experience is and what your mindset is, so I'm going to leave that tabled for right now. You didn't say where you live. I am expecting, we're already seeing large increases in crime, and the predators are going to come out in force. So this is a tough act, I know, and there's no way to prepare for everything. Got some more questions for these last 10 minutes of the show. Here's a question from Peter Nikitas again. Hi, Peter. About the Iraqi withdrawal. Question. Rear Rack, CO of the Red Bull Division of the New Mexico National Guard, announces new deployment, quote, to assist withdrawal of existing American GIs in Iraq. News broadcast on Minneapolis, Fox 9. Well, listen, we're in the age of doublespeak. I don't know what that means. Tom, you know what that means?
I understand, getting ourselves out of that place is going to be very, very difficult. We have dumped so much equipment in there in the last decade. It's pushing 10 years we've been there now. That place is just, the whole place is going to sink with all the equipment, truck, tanks, guns, everything else out of this place. Getting it out is going to be a horrible problem.
So you simply can't
get the line and drive it down to Saudi Arabia. That's what they'll try to do. But the logistics withdrawal of that equipment, I expect we're going to have to end up abandoning it all, is what we're going to have to do.
Oh, that's what I'm afraid of. But now I can see this clearly, because in the Army they have battalions, regiments, which specialize in specific tasks, and one might be heavy equipment.
You're looking at transport companies, logistic companies, or people capable of packing up equipment and getting it on trucks and that sort of thing, and getting it out of the country. So it's a fairly long way down to somebody's border. I just have to take it down to Kuwait and ship it out from there, and that's just a mass logistic job to do.
Okay, we're down to the last 8 minutes of the hour. Again, if you want to get a last question in for my great guest, Tom Whipple, tonight, the email is lifeboathour@collapsenet.com. You can call in at 888-874-4888. Tom, we're just a couple old guys sitting back in our chair. We're talking. What are you worried about happening first?
Oh, I think it's clear the oil price spikes are the first thing that's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree.
That's why I've been concentrating this thing. I know there's an awful lot of things that are peaky out there. We're getting in trouble with food. We're getting in trouble with water. We're getting in trouble with climate, phosphorus, all sorts of things. But I think the oil has such a direct and immediate impact on our lives.
Yes.
You know, as we saw 30 years ago with the, you know, this country runs 5% short in its fuel supply. You end up with gasoline lines, odd and even rationing, all sorts of hell breaks loose.
Now, here's a question. We've been watching peak oil for a long time, you and I both, and I know I was reading you when this was happening. And it was in 2007 and 2008 when we did the big run up to 147 oil.
Sure.
That if some terrorist's cousin in Lebanon burped near a pipeline, the price of oil went up $5 a barrel.
Sure.
If a little pipeline burst somewhere taking 30,000 barrels a day out of production, oil went up $10. But now we see events like that, and the oil price is staying. It's not fluctuating with the volatility that we saw then. Why is that?
Got so many other factors affecting oil right now. It's fluctuating more with the euro dollar ratio than it is with supply and demand things in the world.
Right.
A lot of that, of course, is just the speculators. That's what runs the price up, is speculators say, oh, my goodness, a pipe blew up, right up. You still get some of that. The Alaska pipe went out last week, and that ran up a couple dollars for a couple days, and they got it repaired again.
We want to be clear that I don't think Tom or I, and Tom will speak for himself, but are saying that all of the run-up in the oil price is as a result of speculation.
No, it's not speculation at all. It's basically, underneath it all, it's fundamentals. What it is. It's the fundamental of oil. The supply and demand is not there. There's not enough oil to make up for the demand. That's what's running it. Is there some speculation on top of that? Yes, there's some speculation on top of it.
I mean, the math is real simple.
They can add a few. They can add some percent. We're still arguing about what percent they add to the run-ups on top of it.
This is real simple, actually. It's just simple arithmetic. Which is that we know that this year, in 2011, global demand for oil will be higher than it has ever been in human history, exceeding the peak demand level set in 2007.
Sure likes it, unless China takes a sudden nosedive and collapses in the next 2 or 3 months.
Which is a possibility, but we also know that...
I'd like it. The place is too damn big to come all glued at once. So.
Well, I don't know. I'm kind of having visions of like everybody losing it everywhere all at once.
It could be. They've got problems there too, but they're very flexible in controlling their problems. They've gotten very good at this in the last this sort of pseudo communistic capitalism they run over there. They've gotten very good at fine tuning, their own economy there, and they're very very light on their feet. Somebody sends out a telegram from Beijing, and everybody in the country does the same thing an hour later. You certainly don't see that with the U.S. banking system.
No. But of course, we live in a place where there are 70% of all the trades are computer generated, and they last an average of 7 seconds. So.
7 seconds, yes, that's what I think. So,
I mean,
that's some of the problem. So,
Tom, False Church News Press. I know you've impressed a lot of people tonight. How do they find you, and how do they follow your writings on peak oil?
Oh, I've just known the editor there. I've just known the editor there for a long time. At first, the editor's got a very interesting business model. He doesn't pay anybody to write for it. That's why he's still in business.
That's not the way.
So he's running around caught an endless array of local citizens and politicians and whatnot to write his columns for him. He writes the basic news himself.
What's the website where people can find you, Tom?
It's just False Church News Press.
FCNP.com,
I think.
.com, yes.
That's a very good a great business model there. He's probably going to be in business a lot longer than the Washington Post is.
Well, that wasn't the way I did it at FTW. We paid all of our writers really well, and they wound up getting the money. And we've had a great time covering this stuff around the world. One last question. It came in from Karen Schlitt. I put myself through college and graduate school. I have no debt except education loans. Uh-oh. It's not possible to have them paid off within the next few years. I'm on a 15-year payment plan. What is likely to happen with these types of debt, and what can I do about that now to best prepare for collapse? Well, be prepared. If you decide to file bankruptcy, guess what? The student loans stay with you.
Student loans stay with you the rest of your life, I know. That's one of the biggest parts of the whole thing.
Yeah. That's.
So boy, I'm just not sure what recommendation is. They could change the rules on that. If a default becomes widespread enough, I presume that people just walk away from them.
Yeah, I mean, if it happens on the order of tens of millions of people doing it,
I know they can't do anything about it.
No.
You know, if tens of millions of loans default, which they probably will.
It's kind of like how the rest of the world wants to do the run on the dollar and dump the dollar, and that move is underway, believe
sure.
me. But they don't want to do it all at once, so that by the time they sell their dollars, there's nothing left. And you don't want to be the first one to stop paying your student loan, so that you get singled out and go to the Who's Cow.
You're the first one to go to jail, whatever they do to you, for not paying your single loan. That's
yeah.
trouble.
Yeah.
So my advice, just keep pay away and stand by and see what happens with everybody else. So they'll.
Kathleen,
you may become a critical mass of non-payers someday.
Okay, listen, I just got the high sign from the studio. Tom Whipple, thank you so much for joining
Great
us tonight on the Lifeboat Hour. You can follow him also on the World News Desk at CollapseNet. Anytime Tom posts a story, we put it in our mix there. I encourage everybody to read him. The man just is, I love the way he writes, anyway.
Thank you.
Tom, we'll be talking to you soon. Keep your powder dry.
Thank you.
And everybody come back and join us next week on the Lifeboat Hour. My guest will be Tom Lindsay of the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. This guy is changing the legal world. He's giving us a legal place to stand to break the back of the corporate paradigm and challenge corporate personhood. It's an amazing story. He'll be our guest next week on the Lifeboat Hour. We'll see you then. Good night.